During the Switch Pivot or Quit Chat, we talk to women that have successfully navigated through some of the plot twist years of life and are eager to share their stories and what they've learned in the hopes of inspiring, teaching, or making even the slightest impact by candidly owning their truth. Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping in to the Switch Pivot or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, a former sports entertainment publicist in New York City, turned traditionally published author with Simon & Schuster, who quit my old life to write a book, live in London for a bit, and explore my dreams to find my happiness and fulfillment. I'm here to help encourage and guide you through your plot twist as your chief encourager and host of the Switch Pivot or Quit podcast. Let's get this conversation started. On today's show, we're chatting with Brandi Richard, a mother, innovator, entrepreneur, author, and advocate. Her innovative ideas led her to create her own companies and concepts, including Awaken Concepts, an idea generation firm, Inspired Designs, Apparel, and many more. During the course of her life, Brandi transitioned from preppy student leader to young military wife to hip vegan tree hugger. Since she has earned the distinction of being the first to hold the office of president for two consecutive terms of the National Urban League Young Professionals. For almost 12 years, Brandi has shared her ideas, communications expertise, and project management skills with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, also known as FEMA, where she currently serves as a public affairs officer. Brandi is a highly sought-after keynote speaker and has received numerous accolades, including a Key to the City of Birmingham and Dallas Business Journal Top 40 Under 40. With her new book, Operation Growth, she has now officially added author to her title.
Hello, Brandi. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ayana. I appreciate you having me on. This is great.
Absolutely. So excited to chat with you. So for those who don't know, Brandi and I met via this very interesting way of sort of pitching yourself to the mass media. And it was like this roundtable pitch session for people to pitch themselves to a group of podcasters. Let's start by telling us how you found out about that experience, Brandi, and what that was like for you.
It was an amazing experience because I didn't know that there were that many different podcasts out there in the first place. Mm. I knew that, of course, there were podcasts, but as you start scratching the surface, there are just so many different types and so many different people and voices. It was just amazing to be able to be with those people at the same time, including you.
Thank you.
So Mary Sims was originally had the job that I now have in Oakland. And she was training me for my public affairs officer position for a couple of weeks before she left. And she was telling me, hey, I'm going to start this business. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And she was so helpful and so great to me on her way out. And I was really feeling bad because I wasn't going to be able to work with her because she was leaving. Mm-hmm. So I was like, hey, let me take that class you're going to have. Mm. And she was like, she just didn't believe that I was actually going to spend the money and take the class, but the class was way worth it. Mm. And that pitch session was part of it.
Okay.
So participating in it, she always tells us to be disruptive in our PR efforts. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, I'm going to pitch to all the people that I liked. Mm-hmm. Like once you guys pitched to us and told us what your podcasts were about, I was like, okay, I like this one, and this one. So I made a 2-minute pitch about all of them and fortunately got about 4 people to say yes, that I could come on their podcast. So it's pretty cool.
Which is great because for those listening who might not understand the background, their assignment was to listen to all of the people presenting their podcasts. So I was one of them. And then you had to select one to yourself to. But Brandy said, forget one. I'm pitching myself to all of them that I think apply, because why not? I should be disruptive, right? So that, to me, and that really stood out to me as well as everyone else participating, because it's like, hey, sometimes you have to know when to break the rules and know when it's okay and know when to make your own rules and know that you and have that confidence to do it, because you might get the kind of results that you actually want to get. And that's exactly what happened with you, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I ran out of the room and I was telling my daughter, I was like, Brandis, I got all these podcasts. She was like, I could hear you, Mom.
Exactly. She's like, I know you're excited. Hello. I get it. That's so cool. So let's backtrack a minute. And I want you to tell us about your switch, pivot, or quit experience, because that's what we talk about here on the show. So I want you to tell us about your own switch, pivot, or quit experience, because I know you have an extensive professional history.
Well, I've actually switched, pivoted, or quit so many times across my journey that I'm not going to bore you with all of them.
Right.
But I make that part of kind of who I am. I really love butterflies. I kind of liken my experience to that of a butterfly. And I like cocoon and slough off like all the time and just completely change who I show up in the world as, how I go to work. So when you switch and take a new position, you have a great opportunity to decide, okay, I'm going to be a different type of employee. I'm going to be a different type of leader, maybe in that space. But the most recent switch, pivot, or quit for me was when I left the National Urban League Young Professionals as president for 2 terms and decided that I was retired and done with advocating on behalf of young professionals, because that was a time and place in my life for about 8 years that I spent doing that work. And I was done, like over Phoenique, moving on to something else, because I had determined during the time that I was doing that, that my actual purpose was to advocate for women and girls.
Wow.
And so as soon as I left Florida, the last conference that I went to, I drove back and I started thinking and meditating on, I stopped at a few hotels, sat at a few beaches, just contemplated, how was I going to impact the lives of women and girls like I had been able to impact the lives of young professionals over the past 8 years. And actually, that's where the total switch of what my book was going to be came about. And now I'm about to release Operation Growth, which is really an exciting time for me.
Right. So let's go ahead and hop into that now. Tell us a bit about your new book, Operation Growth. Just in general, tell us a bit about it. And then I want to know what made you sort of say, hey, I have to write this. I feel like this is something I need to do.
It was totally foolish for me to write this, because it's... It's a memoir. Uh-huh. It's like me telling my story in a way that allows other people to see opportunities for their potential growth. And what I wanted to do was show through stories, because I'm from Louisiana. We're storytellers in my family. If you ever go to Louisiana and sit long enough on somebody's porch, they're going to tell you a story about something.
Right. My family's from Louisiana too. So yeah, I get it.
Yes, ma'am. it. And so being able to capture in a story a lesson and show you how I learned from like totally messing up, totally falling flat, learned from being shamed, learned from allowing people to throw shade at me, learn from leadership opportunities, learn from being a mom, so many different things, even learn from generational baggage and understanding like why I'm here on this planet today, really instructed how I was able to grow and mature and become the woman that I now am. And you don't just jump from being naive and immature to being totally all together without going through failures and challenges. And so that's what Operation Growth is all about. It's just telling those stories of challenges and then giving people nuggets to think about and gnaw on and start to put to practice in their lives how they can grow through those same types of things.
So what was the main thing that made you say, you know what, I need to write this book. I need to share these stories. I know you have a daughter. Was it because you wanted, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but something for her to be able to reference, you know, like what was the thing that made you say, I need to share these stories?
I definitely wanted to write it for her and it's dedicated to her. So you nailed that one right on the head. But I also felt, especially after being a leader for about 8 years, there were stories and things that I would hear about the women in the organization, things that they would tell me, things that I would hear about them, challenges that they were dealing with. And I was always more empathetic with the women in the group than the men because I wanted them to be successful leaders. And the things that inhibited their leadership were so different from the things that inhibited men. They were things like, you know, I want to get married and so I can't lead anymore. Or I want this guy to like me and so I can't be in this type of assertive space. Or I just don't have time, or I have a kid, or, you know, I'm balancing all these things. I'm taking care of my mom, those types of things. And so what I realized were that these sideline conversations that I would often have with women that I felt close enough to just be really honest and candid were conversations that I needed to have with more people because, quite honestly, we talk a lot about success. We talk all day about how we were able to make it, but we don't talk about how we failed, not in detail.
That's so
and
true.
The detail of failure is the defining part of really being able to be successful as a result. Mm-hmm. One of the things I had asked my mentors when I started, after I had been leading for a while, was, why didn't you tell me that I was going to suck at things and that I was going to mess up and that people were going to come after me? Like, you didn't tell me any of those things. And those are the things that you need to know in order to be able to be the best you can possibly be. And I just felt like I needed to share that. And that was part of me being able to advocate on behalf of women and girls.
Right. I like that you are bringing that up because a lot of times in interviews, let's say, and you know what, I'm going to push my guests moving forward to talk about and share with us a rough time that they really navigated in specifics, because I found before when I've even tried to sort of touch that, people that are media trained, especially, they navigate it nicely and they don't really talk about it because a lot of times people don't want to focus on their shortcomings or the negatives or whatever, and they don't necessarily look at it as a learning experience. But since you brought it up, I would love for you to tell us one thing that maybe you learned from yourself in your leadership position that you in a situation where you sort of failed or something didn't quite work out or you messed something up, but you learned something from it. Would you mind sharing a story with us or an experience?
Oh, absolutely. I share them all in the book. I've become masterful at telling my business, telling off of myself. So when I led in the Urban League, there were quite a few times when the business of the executive team spilled out into the membership. Now, it's not supposed to. Like, when you go to have your meetings with your leadership team, those meetings are supposed to stay confidential and you make decisions and then you move forward as a team. But I had some people on my team who didn't necessarily care for me or didn't necessarily trust that what they were hearing from me was accurate, and they started talking. And this actually happened in both of my terms as president. And the first time, I was like zipper shut, didn't open my mouth, didn't say anything about it, because the way that I was brought up is that your work speaks for you. There's, you know, I wasn't going to betray the team and talk out of turn because all I needed to do is continue to work hard. And that was going to open doors. People would see all of the work that I did and still support me. And then I ran for president again. And during that election, all of these things that had been circulated about me were being brought up in conversations about whether or not people should vote for me. And one-on-one, I started having these conversations, not realizing that I had the bully pulpit. I was the freaking president. And I wasn't sharing my own story, sharing the truth of what actually happened in those closed door meetings. However I chose to share it would have helped me not to have such a nail biter of an election when I ran again. And it was because people didn't have the story for me. And because I was trying to be this, you know, leader with such character and integrity that I wasn't going to breach the sanctity of the executive team. Mm-hmm. all of that BS mm-hmm. landed me in a razor tight election. And I do tell that story in the book because you have to deal head on with people who are saying negative things about you. Mm-hmm. And no matter how many different people kind of intimated that to me or told me I needed to stand up for myself or fight for myself, they told me in all these different ways. I didn't understand it and get it because I thought God fights for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone's going to know the truth about me because he fights my battles and all that kind of stuff. And God has had my back every single time. However, howsoever, mm-hmm. I should not have put myself in a position where the only truth that people were hearing about me was a lie because I didn't have sense enough to open my mouth. Mm. So I definitely learned from that experience and I don't do that anymore.
Right. Now, I know that I've been in this situation and actually a young lady reached out to me today and she's expressed that she feels like no matter what she does within her position at her job, it's not right. She can't do anything right. And I've experienced that before. And for those people, and that when you were saying that, it just made me sort of think of those types of feelings. And sometimes you might share those stories or those examples with other people, your peers, you know, your friends, and say, oh, I'm just so frustrated at this job. You know, I can't do anything right. And sometimes people don't really get it and they don't really understand what that feels like. Do you have any advice for anyone that might currently be in a situation like that as to maybe some things that they could do to help them navigate that space?
So my dad used to tell me it's a poor dog that won't wag his own tail. And for whatever reason, I never paid attention to it. You know, mm-hmm. your dad says a whole bunch of things and right. you're like, yeah, whatever.
Right.
But what I found at work is that the people who are the most successful are the ones that every time you meet them or they meet someone new, like you can just watch them walk around the office, mm-hmm. say, hi, I'm Derek. And I used to work at such and such. And there I was able to do such and such. And I've been to this and then this and then this. And after that, I did the that. And so now I'm here ready to offer my skills to whoever mm-hmm. needs them. Mm-hmm. And you're like, man, he's a jerk. Why don't you go sit down somewhere and stop talking all that smack?
Right.
But everybody knows everything that he's done. Mm-hmm. He has a 2-minute elevator speech that he repeats every time he goes in front of somebody.
Right.
And for whatever reason, that weighs heavier than you sitting over there doing a whole lot of work
mm-hmm.
and never explaining to someone how great you are.
Right.
Right. So you've got to have that. You've got to have that arrogance
mm-hmm.
and that confidence enough to be able to tell your story confidently to people mm-hmm. so that when decisions need to be made, people are thinking positively of you.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And you can get stuck in this cycle where you're just constantly feeling the negative of your situation. But if you get out there and start championing yourself, usually you don't find that the people like, I think you call them Derek, people like Derek usually don't have the same type of troubles and issues in the office space or in the work environment that the people who just put their head down and do the work do. And Derek may not even be the most qualified. He may not even be the best at what he does, but he makes you think he is. And he sells his story very well. So he's the last person that they're going to get rid of because
he may not do any work.
Exactly.
Derek may not do any work. Derek may have Patricia doing his work.
Exactly. Right. No, that's true. Very true. Very true. Yes. Great advice. I love that. Definitely. So you moved on, and now you have this role at the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which otherwise is known as FEMA. You guys, full disclosure, we're laughing because, like, I knew that that's where she worked, but you hear FEMA all the time on the news and this and that, but you don't hear Federal Emergency Agency.
So now we all know.
Now we all know. Full disclosure. I'm like, oh, you work? She's like, yeah, because I work at FEMA. And I'm like, FEMA. Yes. So now that I can take my dense cap off and we can move on, you work there as a public affairs officer. Can you tell us a bit about how that position came about and sort of what your role is?
So I am the spokesperson for the region, and I represent Region 9. I handle most of our media inquiries, our digital accounts, and things of that nature. It's really an external affairs position. I work directly for the external affairs director and support the regional administrator and the deputy regional administrator to do the work of getting our message out. That position is a huge accomplishment for me. It's something that my parents are really proud of me. They were both retired from the federal government. And so being able to see me be able to be successful in this way is really, really makes them happy, which of course makes me happy.
Right.
But I started with this same agency 12 years ago on the phone, taking calls as a temporary for Katrina.
Wow.
And the only reason that I started taking calls for Katrina is because I'm from Louisiana, wanted to help people from my hometown, and saw the devastation of Katrina and thought that was the best way that I could help because, you know, I like talking. And so I talked on the phone and some kind of way ended up with a career.
Wow.
So for that to happen is pretty amazing. Definitely God ordained, but there were some points in there where I was hopeless, where I was doing jobs that I didn't think I would ever move on from. And I definitely didn't think that I would be in the position that I am now, nor still with the agency even when I started back then.
Well, I'm glad that you touched on that. We all go through some times where it's a little bit challenging, and you know, you have some of your trying days where you're battling to sort of keep your head up and move forward and, you know, balance it all. What are some of the things that you find yourself doing when you go through those challenging times?
You know, one of the things that I did, and in writing, I was able to really kind of put it together, because sometimes I don't think we really take stock of our life in that way until you write it down. So I'm a big advocate of journaling and anything where you can keep track of what you're doing. But there were about 6 to 7 years where I was stuck in basically the same type of position. Like they wouldn't really let me, and I'm saying they wouldn't really let me because that's how I felt at Vance. All the jobs I applied for, I didn't get. I was able to move around laterally. And so I was able to get some additional experience within the organization. And one tip that I would give is if all you can do is move around laterally, then move around laterally so that you can learn more skills, because those things will come in handy when and if you ever get out. The other thing that I did was I got involved with the young professionals and really started doing a lot more community-based work. And so the fulfillment that I wasn't getting at work, I got from the volunteer work that I did. But I also was able to hone some skills there and have some opportunities there that I never would have gotten if I had just been focused on my 9-to-5 job. So by being involved in the Young Professionals and getting involved in this group in Dallas called Leadership Dallas, it was a competitive program, but I was able to get into the program. I was able to just see more of the city, be a part of the mayor's council. There were just all of these different things that I was able to do. And those skills, coupled with the skills that I gained from bouncing around from position to position, set me up perfectly so that when I got the call that said I was finally going to break out of jail and leave that dead-end job,
right,
I had all of the skills that I needed to be able to answer my new supervisor's questions and say, yeah, I can do that. Yeah, I can do that. And yeah, I can do that. And I moved my little happy jack behind to DC and took another opportunity. And the rest is really history, because I wasn't moving there. And so if I hadn't have done those other things, it wouldn't have been as beneficial for me to continue to stay there. But the other option, of course, is to leave. There are times when, you know, the waiting is not the thing to do.
Right.
When it's time to just move to a different ship where they will give you an opportunity.
So
you have to weigh that.
I like touching on both of those, because a lot of times people think, oh, I'll just wait it out, it'll get better, something will come through. But sometimes you have to take control and sort of make things happen for yourself. And the main thing that I took away from what you just said is movement, constantly allowing for movement in your life and not allowing yourself to be stagnant, even though your situation may feel like it's holding you down. That doesn't mean that that's exactly what it has to be. And sometimes change and fear of the unknown really hinders and stops a lot of people from going after what they truly want. Can you share a time with us when maybe you had to encounter a big change in life and how you sort of dealt with that, facing that change?
You know, even the move to DC was a huge change for me, because my daughter was in, she hadn't finished high school yet. And so it meant that I was going to have to leave. And she wanted to stay so she could finish high school in Texas, which meant that we were going to be in two different places, which was really difficult.
Right.
Plus, cost of living in DC was way different than the cost of living in Texas.
Right.
And so even though I was getting a promotion and an opportunity, I was going to have to live very frugally until I was able to move up. But change has never really, I've always been one of those like fearless, go ahead and go people. Even my most recent move back to, well, back to California from DC, like who moves across country? I do.
Right.
By themselves, figures it out, you know, figures out the movers and all that kind of stuff. That's just kind of who I am, because I know if you don't take big risks, you don't get big rewards.
Exactly. And a lot of people, they have this idea of perfection in their mind. Like, I can't make a move. I can't make a change. I can't do anything until I'm ready. I need to research more. I need to take this class. I need to do this. I need to do that. You don't know how many people I've heard say, oh, well, I'm a perfectionist. So I'm not doing it until it's perfect, or I can't do it until it's perfect, or I know that it will be perfect when I do it. I'm assuming that you laugh because you probably heard the same thing and you know exactly where I'm going with this. What would be your advice to someone who's letting the idea of perfection hold them back?
Who has perfectionist as a sickness? That is keeping them from their best self. It's a disease. But I really think that it's important to do research and planning, because I do those same things too. I don't think that you just run out there and have no idea what it is that you're doing. I think it's very important that before you leave a job for some big entrepreneurial adventure, that you have a plan and have some savings and all those types of things. I've done it the wrong way before, and so I know to do it the right way. Mm-hmm. But I also know that don't do it. Like, if you never just pick up and do it, you won't live. And so I really operate a lot by my gut, which is like the craziest thing. People tell me I'm the stupidest person for doing it. And I tell them that every good thing, every single good thing that has come to me has come as a result of preliminary planning. Mm. You know, the basics. Does this make sense? Am I going to make more money? Is the balance sheet going to work out? Mm. Does the supervisor in the new place respect me? Do they want to help me to be successful? Will they give me the training and the support that I need to do my job? Those types of things. I do take all of those things into account, but the split second gut decision is the split second gut decision. And so when I got the call from my supervisor in DC that I didn't even really know very well, I just knew he was over all the offices instead of just my little office that I had been trapped in. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Can you do these things and will you move to DC?" I said, "Yes." Mm-hmm. And that was before I had conversations. That was before I figured out if I could afford the rent in DC. That was before a lot of things, because I knew I was just going to figure it out and make mm-hmm. it happen. And that's mm-hmm. what I did. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little bit more of a risk taker, and I definitely operate with my gut, which to me is the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. But either I know or I don't. It's yes or no. Okay. And then I move with that.
Okay. That makes sense. Yes or no. And I'm sure that sort of figuring out where that gut instinct and all of that comes from, and has to do with, obviously, like you just mentioned, your faith, and probably also getting in touch with yourself. So this is something that mm-hmm. I ask everybody, because I think a lot of times when people are trying to decide what their change will be, or if they're going to make a change, they think it's all about the job or it's all about the career element of things. But I want to know from you, do you think that there's a direct correlation between making changes in your personal life and resulting in changes in your professional life?
Oh, absolutely. You can be, and to be totally candid, mm-hmm. I can hide in my professional life mm-hmm. because I can focus on work mm-hmm. and I can be super successful and totally badass at my job and be dying personally.
Right.
But it's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So until I get with the program and figure out what it is that's going on with me personally, what hurt my heart, what relationship didn't work, what problems I'm having with being a parent or trying to deal with my ex-husband in conversations with our daughter, you know, all of that minutia mm-hmm. is what causes me to break down from a health perspective,
right?
It causes me to have to like miss some days of work. So at some point you have to deal with it. And that's why in writing this book, and I did a journal mostly because I felt like I needed to provide some type of content for people that they could use to start to prepare to mm-hmm. grow.
Mm-hmm.
They're just basic things that you can do, like meditation and prayer and journaling and fasting, mm-hmm. eating more healthy, to get down to and distill your emotions down to what is really eating you and causing you a problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then start working on those things, because that personal layer is critical to you being even more successful professionally.
Right, right. Yes, yes, you hit on it. You did. I'm absolutely enjoying this conversation. And I know a part of that reason is because
you are a professional speaker as well. You've spoken in many different forums and keynotes and everything else. So how did you, for those who are thinking of maybe getting into that space, because as we know, social media has all of us thinking that we are equipped to do everything and we everything. So I'm not knocking anybody's anything. So I want to ask you, because you have an extensive history with speaking engagements, how did you get into the speaking space, and sort of like what were the steps that you took to sort of kick off this speaking career?
I actually got into speaking because I was the spokesperson for the organization. Mm. Like typically when you lead the organization, you're the spokesperson for it. And so you're talking all the time. Mm-hmm. It's just part of the job.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do they say? You do anything for 10 years, then you're really great at it. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been speaking for more than 10 years now. Eight specifically being a spokesperson for at different levels of the organization. And so I think the best way to start public speaking is to figure out what topics you want to talk about, mm-hmm. what you're expert at, what you can talk about without thinking about it, what you're relatable at talking about,
right?
Not what somebody else is talking about. Mm. Like, you can't be me and mm-hmm. I can't be you. And that's because God made us all different, not mm-hmm. because you can't do the same exact thing. Why would you want to do the same exact thing?
Right.
You have to be your unique self. And so starting with free speaking engagements, build up a repertoire and be able to show that you've spoken at different places. Offer yourself to speak on what you're really good at. Mm-hmm. Like if you're expert at how to put together a podcast and make it successful, then go around talking to people about podcasts. I'm using you, Ayana, but I know you already got this under control. But it's what is it that you do? Like I could talk about being a public affairs officer, or I could talk about emergency management, or I could mm-hmm. talk about career, or I could talk about young professionals and how crazy they are. I can talk about civil rights and mm-hmm. all these different things because I've lived it and I know it. So talk mm-hmm. about what you've lived and know mm-hmm. and people will start to seek you out.
Mm. That's so true. So true. It's funny because I've been podcasting since the top of the year. Now I had been thinking about it prior to that, but I just needed to know my lane, and I'm glad I didn't start before then. So I've only been podcasting since January. And
but you're expert at it.
Thank you. But it's so funny because, and that's what I was about to say, is that, and I haven't told my audience this yet, so I'm sharing this now. I'm actually working on a podcast. I'm teaching a podcasting course right now for a top media company that's going to be available for people to buy and consume and everything. And that is because I've been doing this consistently and I've found something in it that works for me. And I can talk about it and I can tell you exactly how to put your podcast together. And when someone reached out to me to ask me how to put a podcast together for themselves, and I freely gave all my information and everything I knew to that person, they then connected me and said, I know somebody who can teach this podcasting class for you guys. I had no clue. Exactly. I had no clue. It was like a couple weeks later and she's like, hey, would you mind if I put you in touch? I know someone who's looking for someone to teach a podcasting class. I was like, yeah, because I had been thinking like maybe I should do that. But it just goes back to your point. Just start operating in your lane. If you're doing the things that you know how to do and the things that come naturally to you and that, you know, you can just navigate it with your eyes closed, people will start to notice and recognize your strength in those areas and they'll start to tap you. You won't have to go and chase it. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. It's a lot of work. It's definitely a lot of work.
Yeah.
But I know the material. I know what people need to know. I know what I would have wanted to know. So I'm excited for people to be able to consume it for sure. But yeah, that's one of those things that I think a lot of people now, and myself included, we see what other people are doing and we start to feel like, oh, I could probably do that. I should be doing that. Why didn't I get that opportunity? But it's like, if you just stay in your lane and focus, you won't end up asking those questions, because the things that are meant for you will come your way. You won't have to search for it. It'll be fine. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's so true.
So have you figured out your why in life, Brandy?
Oh, absolutely. I was supposed to write this book.
Okay.
Which is really messed with my head for a very long time, but I had to write it. Mm-hmm. And you know, fighting about what goes into it and what doesn't, what story I tell and which one I don't. Why do I have to be that transparent? It's been hard. It's been really hard, because part of me is a total open book. Like, if you and I were best friends, we would talk about whatever and I'd tell you whatever and really wouldn't care. Mm-hmm. But there's a professional part of me that's very reserved. And I don't let people in. And there's certain things that you don't get to see. And so really delving into some of these stories, even as I was working with my editor, she was like, okay, so this is your voice. And she was explaining to me. So there's some things where I just feel like you're just putting your foot down and you're like, I'm just not going to let you into all of that. I'm not going to tell you anymore. I said, but that's who I am. So this is definitely my authentic voice. And this is definitely the story that I needed to write at this point in my life. Now, what I'm supposed to do next is totally different. I don't know what that is. I just knew I was supposed to get to this point. And then after that, God will show me what the next thing is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what does success mean or look like for you?
So success is changing a bit. Success used to mean that I wanted to be an SES within the federal government system, which is like a senior executive service position.
Okay.
The highest position that you can get, because when you come from a family of folks in the government, you aspire to get to the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
Period. And financially, that would be great. And I know I can do it, and I know I could help a whole lot of people and mentor a whole lot of people that way. So I wanted to do that. But now I just want to be happy. I want to be purposeful about the things that I do. And I know right now with this writing, I'm on purpose, but I also want to be happy and find joy. So my big challenge right now is to be open enough to let love come in. Cause that's the thing that I'm missing. Like, I have family, I have a great daughter, I have all of the trappings and all of the things that I could really want right now, other than that. And so when that comes, hell, you won't be able to tell me anything.
I love
it. I'd be like, I wrote this book and I got somebody in my life. Oh, please.
That's beautiful. I love
exactly.
it.
Exactly. I may not care about being an SES. I may be like, SE who? Nah. I'm good.
Yeah. I love it. Well, what a perfect way to round off this interview. Love. I loved speaking to you, and we had a great conversation even before we started. Sorry, guys. That's just how it goes sometimes. But we had a great conversation. It was absolutely a pleasure talking to you, Brandy. Can you tell everyone where they can find you, where they can find the book, all of that good stuff?
So you can find all things Brandy at operationgrowth.com. It'll link you to all of my platforms, all of the things that I'm doing. If you're interested in me speaking or just interested in reaching out to me, as you read the book, there are places in the book where I actually ask, because I'm interested in what you learn. Like, is there something that is an aha moment for you? Or do you learn more about how magical you are? I want to know those things. So reach out to me, reach out to me on social media. That's fine too. Because I'm interested in this book actually helping people. If it's not doing that, then I'm not necessarily on purpose, and that can't possibly be the truth. So operationgrowth.com. And I really appreciate you, Ayana. This has been amazing. And I'm so proud of Switch, Pivot, or Quit.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And you guys, thank you for hanging out with us today. And as always, keep killing it.